hope is found. He is my light, my strength, my song. This cornerstone, this solid ground, firm through the fiercest drought and storm. What heights of love, what depths of peace, when fears are stilled, when striving cease, my comforter.
Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. Today we continue with Dr. Neufeld's current series, The Greatest Sermon Ever Preached, with a message entitled Murder versus Reconciliation. Now please turn with me to our text in Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 26. Let's go back to the Bible with Dr. Neufeld.
I'm reading Matthew 5, 21 to 26. You've heard that it was said of those of old, "You shall not murder, and everyone who murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you be put in prison. Truly, I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny." You know, some time ago, a classified ad appeared in a newspaper. It said, "Wedding dress for sale, never worn. Will trade for a 38 caliber pistol." Now, I know that's funny, but I wonder how many of us have said something like, "You know, I could just kill that guy." I think all of us have said something like that. Oh, I know, there's a world of difference between the thought and the action, and there is. But let's come back to that notion at the end of this address. Today, in our study of the Sermon on the Mount, we begin a section in which six times Jesus says, "You have heard it said, but I say unto you." We've noticed that in verses 17 to 20, they present for us the key to understanding what Jesus is teaching. According to verse 17, Jesus stated that he had not come to abolish the law, and that meant that whenever he says, as he does in our passage, "You have heard it said, you shall not murder, but I say to you," that he's not taking issue with the law of God or of the Old Testament. He has not come to abolish the law, but he will explain its true intent, and he will fulfill it. Second, as we've noted from verse 20, that Jesus is taking issue with the Pharisees and the way they're teaching. And so when Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall not murder," he's drawing attention to what the Pharisees have taught regarding murder, and he's about to take exception to that. And by the way, those of old are the expounders of the law, the ancient rabbis that the current Pharisees agreed with. Now, of course, the Pharisees were simply quoting the sixth command, which is stated in Exodus 20, verse 13. It simply says, "You shall not murder." That's a simple command, simple to understand, and you might wonder how anyone could have disagreed with what that meant. But from that command in the Bible, the Pharisees added the words, "Anyone that murders will be liable to judgment." No doubt they taught that from passages like Genesis 9, verse 6. "Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image." See, the Pharisees taught that murder was to be brought before a court of law, and in that law, not all murderers were to be put to death. Mosaic law did not make a distinction in terms of premeditation. I mean, we consider it a far more serious thing if a man planned a murder as opposed to the one who committed a murder out of the heat of passion. But the ancient Hebrews never asked, "How long has this person premeditated this murder?" Rather, the ancient Hebrews asked, "Was this murder intended or not?" And so courts would determine intent and pass judgment. Was a weapon in the person's hand? If it was, the murderer shall be put to death. That, said the Pharisees, is what the law teaches, and that's what they taught. Now, what was wrong with that? Why would Jesus take issue with that? Aren't they precisely right? This is what the law taught. Why not just affirm it and say, on that matter, the Pharisees and I agree? But he doesn't. He begins verse 22 by saying, but I say unto you. So why does he do that? The answer is not so much what the Pharisees said, it's what they left unsaid. So let's examine what's missing. Genesis 1:26 says, then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Now, from that ancient creation account, we learn two things of the nature of man. First, man alone is in God's image. We are a reflection of some of the attributes of God. And secondly, because man is in God's image, man as an image bearer of God is given the command to rule over the creation on behalf of God. Man is to act as God's representative on earth, bringing proper rule and dominion to the creation. So what does all that mean? Well, first, it means that God thinks that all human beings made in his image have intrinsic value. There's an order in life in which human beings stand at the apex. They are the crown of his creation. And that, by the way, the schools teach that man is not unique. Instead, modern secular religion teaches that we are the product of impersonal, random, purposeless chance, and not the result of design and the image of the Creator. If man is the product of chance, then man has no intrinsic value and no intrinsic purpose, and then the commands against murder are treated very differently. That's why someone can take a life, and the world doesn't stop in our culture, and we should demand an accounting on the basis of the worth of that life. See, eventually, random chance, purposeless creation has consequences. Their only value is if we want them. That's also why we're now having a movement to allow legally assisted suicide, for if your own life is not valuable to you, well then end it. It has no intrinsic value. That's why we will eventually see a war against the elderly, because we will not see them as rich in resources, but a drain to our healthcare system. See, that's the logical outcome of the secular evolutionary system that's now enshrined into law. See, whenever human life is treated not as the special project of God, then the taking of a dog's life is akin to a human life. And if I might add one more thing, that's why many secular families no longer have funerals. For they live and die without a sense of the divine, and so human remains are disposed of in the same way as the remains of a dog. Where there is no image of God in this thinking, we live and we die like dogs. See, wouldn't the Pharisees have felt just like Jesus on these issues? Well, yes. They would have had the very same concerns if they had seen the kind of wanton disregard for life. But let's go one step further. Do you remember the first murder? Cain kills Abel. How did that happen? Well, it begins with jealousy, and then the jealousy moves to anger, and then God confronts Cain, not at the moment of murder, but at the moment of anger. In Genesis 4, verse 6, God says to Cain, why are you angry? And then in the next verse, God tells Cain he needs to master his own sin. It is at this level that God begins to deal with him. Master and defeat your anger. See, anger that is the murderous kind of anger treats with contempt that which is made in the image of God. It's a mind attitude, and the Pharisees exemplified that. Think of their attitude towards Gentiles and Samaritans and women. They were contemptuous of them. The very principle which undergirded the command against murder, that is, the value of human life, had already been rejected by them. So keeping the outward command, they denied the basis upon which the command stood, that deep, abiding respect for life. They only taught as much of the command as was necessary so they would not be condemned by their own attitudes. And that's what Jesus confronts. So let's see what Jesus actually teaches. Notice he points out the relationship between murder and a certain kind of anger. In the case of murder, the law taught that the outcome would be the death penalty administered in a human court of law. But when it comes to murderous, contemptuous anger, well, no human court of law can deal with that. But a heavenly one can. And so Jesus warns first of the judgment, which he means God's judgment, And then he warns of the council, and that must not mean the Sanhedrin or the Jewish ruling council. I think he means instead God's council. And then third, the hell of fire is the last in his series. You know, the term hell is the word Gehenna. It refers to a valley of Hinnom, a horrible place where in Israel's past, during the reign of King Manasseh, human sacrifices were made there. Children had been slaughtered to the pagan god Moloch. King Josiah, a righteous king, desecrated the place, and so according to the Jews, the place was rendered permanently unclean. And so the Jews made it into a rubbish pit where the fire was constantly burning. And Jesus used this as a fitting symbol where the horror and endless burning is never extinguished. Jesus spoke of that place in Mark 9:48, where their worm does not die and the fire is never quenched. And Jesus said, if you disrespect human life by vilifying your neighbor, you're in danger of that very kind of hell.
Thou shalt not murder seems on the surface to be a fairly basic commandment. So why would Jesus disagree so strongly with what the Pharisees were saying? In this introduction, Dr. Neufeld helps to shed more light on the deeper context and meaning of this Old Testament law. We see that murder is a heart issue, revealing the emotion of anger that drives someone to commit this act. But how should we understand the connection between anger and murder? Join us as Dr. Neufeld explains on this more. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. By now, many of you have probably heard or received our Bible teaching resource called Confident Living Magazine. This is sent once in 2 months. This magazine offers even more engaging Bible teaching articles from qualified Bible teachers and writers. It has articles that are relevant to life and exclusive updates on the ministry of Back to the Bible. The magazine addresses on difficult issues of life and your journey with God. If you have not asked for your copy of Confident Living Magazine, then don't delay. So be sure to ask for your personal copy. Call us at 9492-440070. Call us at 9492-440070. Or send your request by email info@backtothebible.in.
Storm, what heights of love, what depths of love.